Welcome to Fire Protection Insights, the fire safety podcast brought to you by Ferguson Fire and Fabrication, the leader in fire protection innovation.
What happens when decades of industry experience, mentorship, and a commitment to integrity come together to shape not just a career, but an entire approach to leadership? Hi, I'm Justin Hassel, Business Development Manager at Ferguson Fire and Fabrication. Today's episode is all about leadership, the kind built on relationships, character, and the belief that people are what make the industry strong. We're diving into the lessons learned over a long career, the value of mentorship, and how leading with integrity creates lasting impact in the fire protection industry. Joining me is Jim Bosomworth, National Sales Manager at Ferguson Fire and Fabrication. Jim brings decades of experience in fire protection, where he's built his career on developing strong teams, fostering relationships, and helping people succeed through guidance, support, and doing things the right way. So, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Justin, good to see you. I'm honored to be here with you. Looking forward to talking.
Yeah, me too. So we've got a lot of questions to run through today, a lot of back and forth to kind of go over, and it's all encompassing around leadership, right? I mean, you are, in my mind, quite a legend in that category.
Well, thank you, Justin.
I want to start with the journey. I think anyone in our industry who's been around for a while has held steady and has made an impact on what we do and how we do it has a journey that started it all. So can you give our listeners an overview of just how you got into the fire protection industry and what shaped your path?
It's a story, Justin. I think almost anybody you talk to in fire protection, we didn't have a plan to be in the fire protection business, right? It happened by accident. And my story was I was in college, and it's still when they had a job posting board with 3x5 index cards, something nobody uses any longer. And there was a posting for a security alarm distributor and for part-time work. And I applied, and the manager there and I became pretty good friends. And the owner of that business wasn't running it very well. And when I graduated college, he and myself and two other started into the business. And this was when the fire sprinkler business had not evolved yet to distribution. All sprinkler contractors were giant. They were their own distributor. They were their own fabricator. They had their own warehouses and their own trucking. But where we fit was we figured out a deal with Potter Electric and System Sensor, and we sold those in bulk. So it was almost a mail order house, but we had 800 numbers, and you know, we phone solicited those big accounts, and in the morning we'd work the phones, and in the afternoon we'd go pack those things up. So this, we started in 1983. By 85, 86, we saw the fragmentation and a need for a total fire sprinkler distributor solution. So we entered and found lines of Grooved. You know, we filled out the house and slowly approached contractors on, you know, the whole package, if you will. We didn't start selling the whole package. One contractor would find, you know, they didn't have a source for this, and another would have for that. But it took, you know, years to get to where, you know, the package was recognized. And during that period, we started finding other people in Kansas City and San Francisco when we started new businesses and made that person a partner in there. And we grew to 12 locations. That was a 22-year path, 12 locations, $72 million. And we got into trouble. We had always succeeded at everything we did. And we didn't manage our capital well. We were great salespeople, you know, all those things were right, but we spent more money than we had. We either purchased or started 7 fab shops in 18 months. And you know how expensive that is. And we ran out of cash. We owed everybody money. And of course, there were some lawsuits involved, and we were in trouble. So we went looking for investors or And Ferguson was the best fit for our people. We were 200 people, and I cared about those people, and I wanted to have them have a good career. And so we sold to Ferguson in 2004. So we were $72 million, and Ferguson was a little over $70 million, and that gave them a national footprint. And they went on to purchase other companies, and I've had the opportunity to meet many business owners that used to be my competitors and help be a liaison to integrate them into Ferguson, because our company integrated so well with the acquisition. And that's how I end up here today.
So from an index card to a multi-million dollar company, that is quite a rapid journey. And a lot of experiences learned along the way quickly.
Yeah, the experience of owning a business makes you very diverse. You know, in Ferguson, we're so big, and people's careers are kind of siloed. You know sales, or you know ops, you know. And in our world, when you do a startup of a business, you've got to learn everything. So that lends my experience to help others through those situations. You know, you get a new position, a guy that can help you integrate into that, you know. So it's been a very interesting career. I've enjoyed, you know, even the sellout portion. You know, there's a lot of pressure in that business and everything, but I've really enjoyed my journey with Ferguson and all the people I've had the pleasure of working with. This is a great company to work for. And our cultures fit, okay? We were very similar, ethics and morals and all those kinds of things. So we really fit together well.
Yeah, that hat rack got pretty full, I guess I should say. So you've been with Ferguson for how long now in total?
Well, they tenured by time at our company. So a total of 43 years, going on 44 years, 22 of it was our own company and 22 of it is with Ferguson.
Wow. So even share both sides of the table, basically, which is, that's a lot of tenure for sure. So I guess through all that time, what does leadership mean to you, I guess, after all these years in the industry? I mean, you've had a chance to be a leader in so many aspects, you know, at the core of it, kind of, what does it mean to you?
Well, let's say what leadership is not, because leadership is not management. We get a little confused in that arena. You know, we all have things to manage. We're all managers. We have people working for us in that. But leadership is the first part of it in you is what you do by example, okay? People follow leaders that lead by example, right? They want to aspire to be as the same or better than you do is what they want to do. So I lead by example, and then I try to help people along the way, right? Leadership means not telling people what to do, but guiding them through situations. And I really enjoy that. That is a great part of my career. I enjoy that direction of things. And some people are just natural leaders, you know, and I happen to have that personality, and it falls through to personal life as well. People are always looking for me for the answer. So it's a big responsibility, but it's an honor. I'll say that. But you have to concentrate on the people. You're not concentrating on getting a job done, you know, a function. You're leading people and you're helping them get to a better place in their career.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Yeah. I think sometimes it probably get overwhelming having to figure out the plans all the time. I know I always get asked where we're going to eat or what we're doing tonight. So, but it's like those decisions just naturally come your way sometimes when you're that type of person. So during your conversation there, you kind of started to go down this path, but I wanted you to expand upon it more. So can you share a time when a story that you have when you had to lead through a difficult challenge? I mean, obviously your career has been a challenge the whole way through to go from an index card to where you are today. It's quite a challenge to build that business and to bring up all those people and to open up all those fab shops. But when you think back, is there one challenge that you could probably expand upon?
I'll tell you, and anyone that lived through 08 or 09, keep in mind, I've been through a number of different recessions in my career, and that's always a challenge, right? When the business goes backwards, because not something out of your control, right? The economy or whatever. But 08 was hard hit. And the hardest part of leading through that were really hard decisions because the business was half of what it was the year prior. So, you know, we had roughly 1,000 people working for this company and we went down to 600 people. So those kind of choices that all of us leaders had to make, that was the worst thing. I never was concerned about my job. I always thought, you know, even if I'm not secured at Ferguson, I still have value because of all of my experience. But it changed the company because it erased our bullpen because we kept all the tenured experienced people. And then they started retiring, you know, and the people that should have been behind them with like 5 or 10 years of experience, those people were not with the company anymore. So we had to build it back up. And then the people that stayed, you know, we still have a job to do, but people, they get sideways when they see all those things going on. So there's a lot of coaching and a lot of communication with them. You know, this is as far as we're going and all that kind of thing, you know, to keep stability within the organization. So I know, keep in mind, my business was in trouble and I sold it. You know, that's a whole nother challenge, but that was the biggest challenge that I've ever led a company through in my career. And then I said, I hope something like that doesn't happen again.
I guess, what did that experience teach you about yourself and your team, I guess, moving forward? I mean, I think that's, you put it well, leaders, we often get that mistaken with the challenges they face of making decisions in the present and the future about, you know, our day to day, but not so much about, you know, the other side of the table is, okay, when there is a downturn or if there is a right side up, what do we do? You know, those are the challenges that I think no one really wants to prepare for until they're in the moment, but it's a great point that you bring up. So I guess I would just ask you again, you know, what did you learn? What did it teach you about yourself?
I really learned how resilient I was, okay? You know, my experience and everything leads me to a spot that I'm a very confident person, and I was able to keep my head on my shoulders and boulder through that situation and get to the other side with a good team of people. And it wasn't just me, you know, it was the entire leadership of Ferguson, but we are a very resilient group of leadership that got us to the other side of that.
That's fair. You gotta, you go through any of those, not only do you learn things, but, you know, you find out more about yourself, about how you react in those situations. And now that, you know, we're this far along in your career and you're having to work with probably, well, I would say the largest distributor of fire protection systems in the country, you know, what's it like leading today, leading a sales organization that's of this scale today?
It's really interesting, you know, that we built this thing as big as it is. But I always liken Ferguson to when we were a kid, we played King of the Hill. You remember how fun that game was until you became king, right? Everybody is after you. And that's where we are with Ferguson. And I tell people that story because we need to continue on strategies that keep us in that number one spot, whether that's technology or new offering or whatever that is. We need to continue to always look for that next step that keeps us the king of the hill in the fire protection industry. And we have a lot of creative people that we work together with or with a lot of good ideas. I would say that makes it a little bit easier that you have different perspectives come in. But at the end of the day, for most of my tenure at Ferguson here, it was me and George DiMatteo. We were the strategy team that led the organization to where it is today. And that gets hard to keep coming up with those new ideas. And that's what's been enjoyable for me to see the changing of the guard to Jeff Key and Jeff embracing technology and different approaches. You know, that's what keeps the company going. And I said to George when he retired, I said, George, we did this together for 20 years. We should have people moving in positions every 5+ years, you know, to keep new blood and new creativity coming. And that's what we have going on as an organization.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do think you bring up a valid topic about just staying connected with individuals as a whole, right? When you reach this scale of a company and you have a large pool of very intelligent, critical, out-of-the-box thinkers, it is hard to stay connected to those people and to put them in the right position to where the company flourishes as a whole. And part of that is just communication, right? When we get to be this large a scale, that becomes challenging. Do you have any tips or tricks that you've learned over the years to kind of stay connected, to stay plugged in to people across so many locations?
The fortunate part for me is that I've been kind of ground up with Ferguson, you know, and so I've been part of a building. So I learned and met and built relationships with people as we grew. It's a lot harder for somebody today, as in yourself, you take a national position. We're big, you know, more than 60 salespeople, more than a dozen sales managers, you know, and I mostly manage sales. So that's a lot of people to keep up with. And I did come to a point in my career, and George DiMatteo guided me on this, because every new sales associate in their first 6 months of working here, I wanted to go get on the road with them. Okay. Well, that's impossible at this juncture. So I managed the team through my relationships with the managers, area managers, district managers, senior sales managers. Don't get me wrong, I still talk to a lot of salespeople because I hired them or interviewed them. Now I'm part of their career. I will never let go of them. But for the most part, the things that I managed to manage the sales team was through the other leaders, you know. And I got tagged a lot because when we had a low performer, that's when they want me to come and work with them. And I got a reputation because if I worked with a guy that wasn't performing, a lot of times after I left, they quit. But what I took from that was, but it was just an accountability thing, okay? I was just going to hold them accountable,
right?
And they weren't being held accountable, and they didn't like that. But when George enlightened me, I was more to enlightening the other managers on what I did with those lower performers, you know, and it's either they're going to perform or not. In today's world with HR, what I did was very similar to a PIP. It just wasn't as formal as what we have on Workday today. And we all know the outcomes on PIPs. It's a high percentage of loss of people. But in today's world, I don't do that anymore. You know, the sales managers and area managers, they do that. They're the ones putting people on PIPs. I don't manage through that anymore. They do.
I'll say, you know, just oddly enough, today I was trying to find a contact, you know, in our internal organization. And you start working through our org chart and you start to see how many people have reports. And when you go up so far and you start to see that some people have thousands of people reporting to them, you think, how is that possible, right? You know, how effective could that be? But the point of it all is, you know, you just need to be reachable, right? You can't always touch out and be connected with all of them, but you need to be reachable. You know, if somebody has a question that may pertain up the ladder to you, then they know who to reach and how to reach you, right? And I think that's a valuable asset myself, because I have to deal with the country now. And there's a lot of people who I don't communicate with on a regular basis, but I can. You know, I know how to reach them. I know how to contact them. Just providing them with the resources, or yourself with the resources, to be interconnected, I think is pretty key. And today, when we have such a large company, you know, I want to kind of go back a little bit on our conversation a minute ago and ask you, because for me, I can think of someone in my life who's been a great mentor and who has helped me along my journey. Is there anyone specific for you that's kind of been the biggest impact, the mentor for your career?
I'm just going to mention my dad, because I am Jim Bosomworth because of my father. But entering into business, the branch manager that hired me into the business, one of our partners was his father. And his father was retired vice president from Browning Arms. His name's Robert Clark Sr., and the man took me under his wing, okay? He treated me like a son, and he was a very intelligent business person. You know, you don't get to be a vice president of a company like that without real, I look at our vice presidents, you know, Jeff and Wally Quigg. I look at all those are really experienced, knowledgeable, smart individuals. And for him to take me under his wing and just guide me through, you know, we started a business and he guided us through all kinds of things, you know, just little things that he was a stickler on. He's like, if it goes out the door, it bills the next day, you know, just simple ingrained business practices, but, you know, all aspects of business he was engaged in as a vice president, and he had that knowledge to impart on us as we grew this business. He made me a better man. I'll just say that, okay? Not am I only a better professional, but he made me a better man.
I think that's pretty critical for leadership to recognize individuals who have potential and to take them under their wing. That's how we grow talent within an organization, you know? So many people get left aside when there's a lot for them to offer. So I think that's an amazing story. And for me, something similar as well, you know? If you'd asked me 20 years ago what a sprinkler head was, I'd have had no clue if it wasn't for a family member, you know, getting me in this industry and letting me find my way the hard way, though, because there was no easy path. So I say, I guess now you've given us some history on your experience. You've given us some history on how you've kind of got to where you got today and what makes up Jim Bosomworth. From your perspective, you know, from a customer's evaluation, what do you think is the most value for them when they choose a fire protection supply partner?
We want to be that trusted advisor for our customers, right? That's really, we're a solution providing company. So what we need to do is ask poignant questions and listen. And by listening to them, we can discover what problems they have, and then we can provide them solutions. But I say day in and day out, what makes us great for the customer is what we say we do. And that resonates as a culture across Ferguson, you know, is I hear all the time, and we deal with salespeople, you know, they make promises and then you don't hear from them and all those kinds of things. We deliver on our promises to our customers. And I think that's the most driving part of our business. That's what makes Ferguson such a great company, is that we're not out telling our customers or selling our customers, we're out listening and trying to find their problems and then matching those with solutions. I think that's what separates us from all of our competition.
Yeah, I think that's well put. You know, I think today it's hard to explain what the full experience is for a customer with Ferguson. We have so much to offer them. You know, I tell so many new people that, you know, if you're a contractor today, we can almost provide you with every service that you would need to operate your business. And they think of that as, okay, well, you sell me stuff. And it's way more than that, right? We sell so many services aside from products that get the job done and effectively. You know, we always talk about the lowest cost installed provider because it means something, right? Providing that service, providing quality, doing what we say when we say it, gets the job done and gets everyone home on time and safe. I think there's a lot more that our customers just don't know about when we talk about what we can offer them. Probably gets overlooked, forgotten, and you know, it's just on us to remind them when the time's right to look into that and to consider us for more than just their daily distribution.
I find that over time, they assume that that's what everybody does. So when a competitor comes in, and it's all about price. And I tell everybody, our culture is a place that we may lose an order, but we will never lose the business, because they're assuming that what we are providing is provided by all fire sprinkler suppliers and fabricators. And sometimes, you know, you just got to go out into the world and experience. It's the same with associates. You know, we have a lot of new trainees we bring in, and we get poached by all of our competition and our vendors and contractors and everything else. And they think the grass is greener. They think they're going to go into the same culture and the same group that we have here. and they have to get a taste of it. Many of them have come back after going to work for a competitor or a contractor. Many have come back. I have hired two guys twice. They went to work for a contractor, and they came to me and they said, this guy's offering us $2 more an hour. I stuck out my hand and said, hey, guys, good luck to you, and you will be back working with me in less than 3 years. They were both shocked because they thought I would just give them the money. And I was more like, no, they need to get a taste of, you know, what the real world is about. It's not all peaches and cream like that. And both of them are here at Ferguson with us today. So sometimes you got to let a customer go, or you got to let an associate go so that they can have that experience and firm up, you know, those assumptions that, wow, you know, that's really something that you have at Ferguson.
You know, I think that speaks to wise leadership, right? You're allowing individuals, companies to learn, to explore, right? I mean, I can say myself as a customer previously, in my previous capacity, I had many opportunities and explored around and consistently came back because the experience here was consistent. It was repeatable. I could take it to the bank, you know? And that's important in today's world. There's so much exposure for liability in what we do. You really need a partner that's consistent, that you can rely on. And I think, you know, good leaders will recognize when others need to, you know, have a separation of ways to let them experience, you know, what else is out there. So that way they can learn why, you know, we offer what we offer and why we, you know, hold our heads so high at the end of the day. So I think that's great. You've seen a lot of changes over the years. From your perspective, what's the biggest shift that you've witnessed in the fire protection industry? And I know we've had some pretty significant ones lately, but let's just say overall.
Yeah, overall. So the biggest shift was when we entered into the business of being a wholesaler in the fire sprinkler market, because all the contractors, they all did all of it themselves, bought direct from the manufacturer, warehouse it, trucked it, and so on. So the paradigm shift was people that were working for those giant contractors said, oh, well, I sold all these sprinklers. I could start my own business and make all that money myself. Or you were a fitter and I have installed this successfully. I can start my own business. Well, that created the need for distribution. And furthermore, fabrication, there were very few fab shops when Ferguson and my company started in on that in the early 2000s. And that was the next shift, was fabrication. A lot of those big contractors got out of fabrication when it was being able to be provided to them. There are still some in that, but it's a small fraction of the percent of overall fire sprinklers. So those were the two big changes as I've gone through my career. Sure, there's a lot more coming right now at our feet, you know, and I don't know what they look like at the end, but the one thing I'd say is don't run away from change, run into change. You know, it's going to happen, and the harder you fight it, the harder your career gets is it. But some, you know, be cognizant. If it's not good change, I'm always saying, if we're changing something, is it good for the customer? Is it good for the associates? You know, because if it's not, I'm going to question that change, right? But if change comes, let's say, you know, I was here before emails, you know, and before Excel spreadsheets. And I know many of people in my age looked at Excel and, you know, I'm not going to go in there. Where would we be today if we hadn't entered into Excel? You know, how much of Power BI came, you know, a lot of guys my age were like, you know, I don't know about this Power BI. Well, I looked at it the same as Excel, you know, is like you choose to be obsolete. So if you don't embrace changes, you become obsolete. So you made the choice by not embracing the change.
You know, that's a good point. And I think when you talk about adapting to change, that's what great leadership's all about, is knowing when to evaluate change and decide if it is good for the company or for the customer, and then to push forward with it. You know, a lot of people want to take face value and say no thank you, because essentially you're asking them to do something different. But holistically, when you review it, and you know any good leader should review all aspects of change as they come their way, when it does make sense for the industry to change, you know, when it made sense for the industry to take fabrication and hand it off to a distributor, when they could offer it, so that a way they could get back to what I would consider their core business, which is to design an installation of fire protection systems, you know, and focus on that. I went through that type of change when I was a contractor. Just to give some reference of this is we very much had a bottleneck within our company, and it took some time to evaluate and change was needed, and it was difficult for everyone to accept. But in the long run, when you put it on paper, it was what was needed, right? You took individuals and put them in the right path that they were meant for. You took their skill set and applied it the correct way. And then those things that weren't needed, functions or output from them, got handed off to another area where it could be done more efficiently. And that's where leadership steps in, to sit there and evaluate this stuff and say, hey, we need to change, you know, or hey, the industry is changing. We need to be on board. I mean, you basically put it into perspective as to how you adapt with that. So I guess now the next, you know, question I have for you is, what advice would you give someone starting their career in fire protection today? And what should they focus on to build a successful career?
Great question, Justin. And, you know, I give guidance. I've been part of the sales/manager trainee program that's being reinvigorating. So I get to meet a lot of people first coming into the business. And Ferguson is a big company. Okay. So I'm giving them career guidance because you don't have to go into outside sales or you don't have to become a branch manager. There's so many different facets that you can be. I like to try matchmaker with their skills and their personality makeup and for them to think about what their aspirations in their career could be in Ferguson and point them in a direction. So I'm mainly in sales. So everybody, I'm trying to give them the right perspective on what a sales career looks like, because from the outside looking in, you think, well, those guys are at happy hour playing golf, fishing, you know, that's what people would think sales are. And I had a salesperson tell me one time, you practically have to be a masochist to be a salesperson, because everybody's going to lie to you. You know, they're going to tell you no all the time. And you have to figure out how to deal with that, right? Is when I would hold a sales meeting with a bunch of young individuals, I'd say, I'd write no 9 times up on the whiteboard. And then I would pause for a minute. And I said, and the 10th time you ask, yes. You know, it's like, you got to be persistent and all those different things, you know, there's, and each position has its own level of frustrations and nuances that you have to deal with, but you have to want to do it, right? So many people have gotten into sales thinking, I want to go happy hour. I play golf. I love to play golf. And if that's your reasoning, I had one guy tell me, I asked him why he got into sales and it was an acquisition. He said, well, only the salespeople drive a company truck. And I said that, hey, that's a wrong reason to get in to sales, you know, as I try to guide them along the path. So my advice, if you're coming into the fire protection business, big scale, let's just talk about coming in into the industry. You should look across the industry and see what it is that you're most interested, what really piques your interest, because you have design, you know, we have fabrication, we have warehouses, we have truck drivers, you know, but all of leadership and all the outside sales roles, you know, there's a lot of different directions you could go. You could go work for a manufacturer. There are many people that might be better suited to work for a manufacturer. That's a simpler sales job. You learn one line. I don't even know how many lines we have today. You know, working for a distributor is more complicated than that. You know, you can learn that one line and be good at it. We have to be just good enough at everything. We don't have to be an expert on everything that we sell, but we have to just know enough about it to advise our customers. And that's it. So you don't need to deep dive into all the products. When I interview for a sales position, I'm saying, What do you think is going to be your biggest hurdle to overcome? And they tell me product. And I said, this is a very simple business, okay? It's water, you know? It's a very, very simple. Products are very simple for the most part in this business. The hard part is at Ferguson in particular, but we have a lot of big vendors that are they're similar, is learning us, you know, learning the company that you're going to work for. And the bigger that company is, the bigger and harder of a job that is to do is to know the company inside and out.
That's a good point. You know, I do think as you start to look into our industry, evaluating it, you know, what does pique your interest, right? There are so many positions that you could look towards to plug in. And if you just take one because it's open, it might not be the right fit for you. And it might be a missed opportunity of where you could be and to start your career, you know? And I do think you bring up, you know, a valid one when you say you list out all of these departments per se. You know, our industry, although a lot of people don't know about fire protection, when you get your foot in the door, there's so many different levels and layers to it. Like you said, manufacturing is one, distribution is another, engineering is another. You can even go as far as, and this is just kind of applying outside of our own doors, but even to the fire protection industry from firefighters and fire officials, I mean, we interact with them just as well. We're a whole kind of community per se. And, you know, I think when you plug in where you're interested and you have a mentor, you know, someone who, like you've mentioned before, can kind of take you under their wing and give you the resources and guide you along the right way, you can find success in a career in our industry. And I know that success is different in everybody's eyes. So I would just ask you, what does it mean? How do you define it, Jim?
If you would have asked me earlier in my career, you know, it would be the money. You know, that's how you, we as society, we judge people, right, by how rich they are. That's just a common thing. And for me, the rewarding part now coming to the end of my career is looking back at the people and the careers that I have had impact on. That's my success, okay? When I talk about a legacy, I got a list of people that I've brought into the business or they've came and I adopted them and they've been successful. And I'm not taking credit for their success. I'm just saying I got to participate in their success. I helped them along that road. And that's what I take pride in. And I think I'm very successful at doing just that. And it actually worries me a little bit in retirement because I enjoy that aspect of the business so much because, you know, being a leader is helping other people. And so you don't take credit for their success. They did it. You know, they just happened to listen to some of the things that you guided them on, but they had the drive and they had the ambition and they, you know, they aspired to be who they are. Well, those are the kind of people I link myself with so I can help them along their journey. And it's just, it's been really exciting to watch that. And they're at a lot of layers in Ferguson today. And I enjoy that they were able to, I hope they're able to revel in their success because there's many people working for this organization that have done a great job and moved up through the ranks and they're doing good jobs now and they have a great future in this organization.
Agree. You know, it's funny sitting here talking to you about this stuff. It brings so many things to light for me. And I would say that's probably one thing that I would forget about time over time, which is just the success of watching others that you've helped around you come into their own. You know, I think we all forget how rewarding that is. That probably should be the light that we're after, you know, and the torch that we want to hold along the way is bringing people up around us. I think as an organization, it benefits the company, it benefits the individual, and it benefits yourself just unbeknowingly. And, you know, great point. Looking ahead, what are you most excited about for the future of fire protection and for Ferguson Fire?
I've got two things, really, and we just discussed the one. I'm excited to see what all of you do with the business and I'm calling me and George's departure, because we led for many years, to see what you do. I've told everybody, I'm not coming back the first year that I'm retired. I'm going to come back 3 years after I retire, and I'm going to want to see what all of you have done with this company. I'm so excited about that. You know, and I've already seen some of it as we've promoted yourself and Travis Hitzman. We've promoted people into positions, and you're flourishing in those positions, and you're bringing new ideas to the group, and you're leading in a different way. You know, it's like a breath of fresh air is what I'm seeing here, and it's going to take some time, but it's going to explode. Okay, Ferguson is going to be very successful, and you know, we're going through some challenges today, but we will get through those with the talented people we have working at this organization. We're going to get beyond the challenges that we're facing today, and this company is going to blossom. But for the company and for the industry, I'm anxious to see what innovative products and technology, AI, what are all those things going to bring to fire protection? It's going to change. We've got new products we're talking about, new solutions, you know, the stuff we're doing in the fab shops with a robotic welder, you know, all exciting, new, changing things that are going to explode. You know what I'm saying? In a good way. It's everything's going to take off. And my hopes is that sprinklers become more widely expanded throughout the country in residential and other applications that they're not wildly popular, because what we didn't talk about is we're very proud of being in life-saving business, right? That's in the core of our heart. And when I see a house fire or something, I know a fire sprinkler system would have saved that person or that house or whatever that went on there. And you see it published all the time in NFSA sprinkler notes. You know, one sprinkler head saved a 22-story high-rise building, a kitchen fire in one apartment. You see those stories all the time, but you also see in the news the stories of the houses that burnt that we knew that could be saved, you know, that didn't have or require sprinkler systems. I'm excited that with the new solutions that we'll find a more economical way to deliver and safer way for the homeowners and the others that aren't protected by fire sprinklers.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's well-rounded. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in our industry today. You mentioned a ton of them. And I do think, you know, as I look into the future and as we have you back 3 years from now, 3.5 years now from now, I guess I should say, to show you where we are, it will be fascinating because we're going through so many changes, not only as a company, but as an industry. A lot of what you pointed out. And it will be nice to see where we get with all of it in the future, you know, to what some of the new norm can be, to what the polished off product looks like, just because there are so many moving parts right now. And we're a large growing organization. We are a large growing industry. You know, adoption is key. Awareness is a big part of that. I tell people what I do today, and they first look at me like they have no idea, right? I think we're starting to close that gap a little more. I think people are starting to recognize our industry as a whole, and I think leadership has been a big part of that, you know, getting to the source and communicating and then bringing other people up to support the initiative, right? It's all encompassing to get us to a better place and to provide those services and that life safety to everyone, because it should be. So, you know, Jim, it's always great talking to you. You have been a mentor of mine for a while now. I've been privileged to be talking to you and discussing things with you. I think your insight and your open-mindedness is amazing. I thank you for coming on the show today. I wish we had a whole lot more time. I know you and I can go back and forth for hours, but I really do appreciate the time you had with us today. And, you know, hey, I'm going to be sad when you're gone. I mean, I just look forward to that revisit. That's all I got to say.
Well, it's a pleasure working with the younger group, Justin. You all help me stay young. You know, it forces me to have an open mind. Generationally, we're somewhat different, but we're still human beings at the heart. So we have the same aspirations and all those kinds of things. It just makes me, it makes me smile. And I have about a dozen of you that I spend time with regularly, and I really enjoy it. Like I said, it keeps me young, keeps me refreshed. I'm not that old guy. You know, I don't want to be that old guy is what I don't want to be remembered as. I've forged ahead in my career, my whole career, and that's the way I'm going to go out, is forging ahead. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. That wraps up today's episode of Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast. A big thank you to Jim Bosomworth for sharing his perspective on leadership, mentorship, and what it takes to build a lasting career in the fire protection industry. And thank you to our audience for listening in. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Justin Hassel, and this is Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast, brought to you by Ferguson.